Some of it you gon' like, some of it you ain't. Tired of hearing fools complaining in barber chairs and beauty shops.
This is Truth Brothers Radio.
If you're not listening to the Truth Brothers, then the truth ain't in you. Truth Brothers, Truth Brothers Radio. I'm Ray.
And I'm Devon.
And we are the Truth Brothers. The number to give us a call is 818-514-1202. That's 818-514-1202.
And as always, you guys can hit us up at our email at wewanttruth@att.net. Truth is spelled T-R-U-F.
All right, we got the chat room. Oh, it's cracking in here.
Yeah, it is.
For your questions and comments.
All right.
Yeah.
And second hour topic is going to be Chicago teachers strike. Yeah, the Chicago teachers have went on strike, and it's been going on for this is about a week now, right?
Yeah.
And there's a alleged tentative deal on the table, but the teachers want to look it over and give it the one eye, and the mayor ain't too happy about that. So he's going to court to try to force them to go back to work, saying, we done gave you a deal, sign it and get your butts back to work.
And also stating that that contract is, they saying that the strike is illegal. That's what he said. But real quick, we got to introduce the guest that we coming in right now. She's been a teacher for over 5 years. She also now is a college career counselor at Lynn Bloom Math and Science Academy. I want you guys to give it up. Give a Truth Brothers welcome to Miss Jenny Andrews. You there? You good?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. How you feel?
I first want to say thank you so much for just having me on your show. I definitely consider it an honor to be asked to be a part of this. So thank you guys so much for allowing me to come on here today.
The honor is all ours. Right. That's right. I mean, this Truth Brothers Radio is a show for the people. So when we have these topics, we don't just try to get experts, we try to get people that are close to the situation and can't get no closer than somebody who's actually on strike.
There you go. So, real quick, I know you were down there protesting the other day. What was the spirit like down there? How was everybody's spirits?
I will say everyone was in great spirits. And there was a moment actually on Saturday at the rally at Union Park where you can just feel the camaraderie, and everyone was just together. And it took me back to the civil rights movement and when you're actually marching for a cause. And I think I truly feel that, you know, that someone marched for my rights in the 60s, so it's my turn to march for someone else's. And we're all in it together. And I think that's what my biggest takeaway from the march. You have parents out there marching, students out there marching, you know, teachers out there marching, principals who not technically, not even a part of the union, but out there marching saying, I support my teachers.
Right.
You know, so, and there are a lot of people inside of the school who, if you're an administrator or if you're like a custodial worker or like other people, you may not necessarily be a part of the teacher union, but you're out there saying, I support my teachers. You know, and for me, I was raised by a Chicago teacher in a sense, like I spent most of my time, when school was over, I was still in school, you know, and so I went to Chicago Public School my entire life. I received a great education, and so I truly believe in Chicago Public School teachers, you know, because if you're not at home, you were at school as a kid, you know, and so my teachers was like my second mother, and so the strike was needed for a long time. You know, like I said, it's been a long time coming.
Now, let me ask you this question. In comparison to the teachers, I'm not quite sure how old you are, but I'm in my early 30s. So I think, you know, my generation on back, had good solid teachers, good teachers, you know, who were well experienced, had kids of their own and whatnot. Looking at teachers today, I mean, how do you think they factor into this particular strike? Because from what I'm seeing, you know, teachers are getting younger and younger and younger, and I'm not sure if this has something to do with budgets, with school districts and whatnot. But just what's your take on that?
And I guess I look at it as a two-sided coin. On one hand, teachers are getting younger. I mean, we can see it. It's a great thing because you have people who are saying, I'm committed at a young age to teaching.
Yes.
However, sometimes it can boil down to pay. And so the more experience you have as a teacher, almost like the less qualified you are, the more expensive you are, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because a principal can hire a first-year teacher, and it is not $76,000, but I hope we get to that. So a principal can hire a teacher for probably like a fraction, a first-year teacher for a fraction of the cost that it would take a 10-year teacher or a teacher who's been teaching for 10 years. And so when I was in school, I knew who my fifth-grade teacher was going to be when I was only in first grade. And so you don't see a lot of that anymore, you know, because you do see a younger generation coming in and leaving, like it's a revolving door.
Yeah.
But then I kind of also think about that, too. Why are they leaving, you know? And it's like they're overworked and underpaid, you know?
Yeah.
And so because we're a generation, and you know, I consider myself still in the young generation, I hope. You know, but because we're a generation who sometimes look at the money, and it's like, wait a minute, you know, I can have one profession and do that profession for a fraction of the, or for twice as much as what a teacher is getting paid, you know, with the less pay. Because when you come to teaching, everyone got their hand in the cookie, Jonathan. You know, you deal with the students, you deal with the parents, you deal with the local school counselor, you deal with the administrator, you deal with the board. You know,
yeah.
So you have so many people who have an input in your job that you say, why do it when I can go somewhere else?
Right. Yeah, when you think about what's going on with a lot of these older teachers or more experienced teachers and why they're being, why it seems like they're being driven out of teaching,
mm-hmm.
a lot of that goes back to the school boards and mainly the budget. Like she was saying, the older teachers, the more experienced teachers, the tenured teachers have to be compensated for their time and experience. And if I know, if you want a school, you want a school with a nice balance of older experienced teachers and younger teachers, so the younger teachers can learn and be schooled by older teachers. You don't want I mean, you don't want a school full of younger, all young teachers because who are they gonna learn from? Where are they getting their experience from?
Right.
And sometimes I've seen, I'm going to use my district as an example, that I've seen young, especially young white teachers, and I'm not picking out white teachers in particular, but young white teachers, when you've got a classroom full of young black kids, there's a cultural disconnect that you usually need, not that they can't handle it, but they usually need a more experienced teacher to help them navigate the waters and help them relate and understand to a different, diverse set of kids.
Yes.
And when you're running older, teachers out of there, you're losing that valuable experience. And when you're getting into, like, you know, when we're talking about the black community now, then tracking is real. And if you got a young white teacher who can't relate to a young black male, and she doesn't understand why she can't get to him or why he won't do his homework, he's going to be tracked. And next thing you know, he's going to be in the remedial classes and well on his way to dropping out. And that's real.
A question that I wanted to ask her, though, I was going to call you Lucy. My bad. We both know your actual age, you know what I'm saying? We all grew up together or whatever. But being that you are a younger teacher, and you, I would suggest that first when you started off, you started teaching. What grade did you start teaching off at? I'm curious.
I started fourth grade.
Okay. So it's kind of like when you stepped in the classroom, it's almost like the kids didn't see you as the older, vulgar teacher with glasses that just came off with the – right, because you have a really, really young look. So it's almost, did they almost challenge that? Because I know it's sometimes like they will look at a teacher and say, okay, she's older. It kind of commands respect versus a younger
right.
teacher coming in. We could probably run over her because who are you type of thing. Was it kind of like that?
And I think in every situation, whether young or old, that you're going to have a student who will try to challenge you. You may have an older teacher who may get challenged thinking, oh, she's old, we can run over her. But I think the part of demanding respect or being respected came with the times of parents respecting teachers. And when a parent respects a teacher, their child gave respect to that teacher.
Mm.
And so I will say from my experience, when I first got started, I wouldn't say I demanded respect, but I requested respect. And because I respected my students, they respected me. And so I didn't have a lot of trouble at the beginning, you know, with the disrespect level. And then also at times, I will say it is a difference, you know, between maybe a young black teacher and a young white teacher, especially when you're in an urban setting. So some of my students saw me and they decided they could relate to me.
Exactly.
And so I'm not saying that a white teacher can't relate to their students because they definitely can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've seen it with some of my friends. But they say, hey, I see someone like me, you know. So it's a language I can use that's a little bit different, you know, where they wouldn't test me or try me. But I think as far as being young, like now that I'm in a high school setting, you know, you always had that one student who was senior who like, all right, let me see if I could test her, you know, because I do look young. But at the same time, I do try to present a genuine front to my students, say, hey, I'm only here to help you. And that's what I think students respect, when they realize you truly want to help them. And so that's what we definitely need to make sure we continue to keep in the classroom, is the fact that teachers want to help students. And so that's why when I listen to the media and I think about it, and they saying, you know, teachers are not for students because they're on strike. No, I'm on strike because I am for students. Because I know that when I get into that classroom and close that door, then the fight is over, you know. And so I want to make sure that I give everything I can for my students while I'm at the bargaining table before we sign anything. And so
right.
I think that's what it's really about.
All right. 818-514-1202 is the number. Call in and give a question to Jenny Andrews, school teacher on strike. This is your chance to say what you got to say in the chat room or give a call and get your piece out there so she can fill some of these questions. I want to ask you a question real quick, and I want to know what your opinion is about for-profit schools.
I mean, I think, you know, and I try to use my words carefully, you know, because you always quote it somehow in the media somewhere. But I think at the end of the day, you shouldn't have to charge for a quality education, period.
Exactly.
And so it's not okay. Like, the fact that we live in a society where people have to charge for a better education for their students, they have to pay for it. So what are you saying about the public school? You know,
what?
And it's like, are you saying that, well, they're not good enough for my students? And it's unfortunate that in some cases that's true. And so I think that's the big piece of the strike, is that I should be able to go to any school, whether on the south side of Chicago or on the north side of Chicago, and not see a difference. I should see those same resources. Parents shouldn't have to pay for education. It shouldn't be a privilege but a right.
That's right. That's right. You know, this is something that I'd like everybody out there to chime in on, or at least think about. Why does it seem like everything in America nowadays has to be for profit?
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean? Look, there's certain things that just shouldn't be for profit. Profit shouldn't matter. Profit shouldn't be the main outcome in the endeavor that we're embarking on in certain situations. I don't believe a hospital should be for profit. A hospital should be for healing and helping people, not for
yeah.
profit. Hospitals used to didn't be for profit. Schools shouldn't be for profit. If you've got a for-profit school, what is the number one goal at that school? Is it educating the kids, or is it making a profit? You can't serve two masters in that. And matter of fact, how do you turn over a profit in a school? That doesn't make sense, because And education is an investment. It's not something you should be trying to profit on. At the same time, a lot of you out there, your public utilities, you need to think about that. Your public utilities shouldn't be for profit. Your phone, your internet, your electricity, your gas should be provided, and you should have to pay for it. Yeah, pay for it to maintain the infrastructure and to make sure that it's getting upgraded and modernized so you can have the best in the world. But it shouldn't be for profit. Your lights shouldn't be for profit. That's just my opinion.
Ken, about to say something?
I'm just speculating here. Trying to address Ray's question, and Ms. Andrews, tell me if I'm even in the ballpark. But you know, certain private schools certain private schools who do charge a very hefty tuition, I'm thinking they get the better teachers. They have, you know, better equipment, better staff, better books, you know, better learning devices. And then when they go on from high school on to college, these schools, this is basically their key to get into these upper schools.
I think it still think it depends on the school. You know, because of this strike, our studies have come out in Illinois for sure. And I'm sure Jenny knows this, that blow for blow, private schools and charter schools and these for-profit schools overall do about the same as the public schools. You've got some that do well. You've got some that do well, like Kipp schools do well, and then you've got some public schools that do well, like Walt Disney.
You've got
some public schools that are the cutting edge, that are some cutting edge schools in the country, but it all is a matter of location.
I was gonna say, is it just a matter of just socioeconomics?
A lot of it has to do with that. I mean, a lot of people don't understand that how the school budgets get divvied up. The school budget doesn't get divvied up evenly. The school budget gets divvied up according to people's property taxes. And if you live in a poor community, well, you're going to have a school that doesn't have a lot of resources. If you live in a rich community, then you're going to have a school that has a lot of resources. There's a lot of schools up north in the north side of Chicago or in the north suburbs that have hellified resources. There's some schools that have television stations in their school. They're teaching broadcasting and radio broadcasting in high school.
Yeah.
But if the school can afford the resources, and a lot of people look at your property tax bill and see how much of your money goes to education for that school district, and then check out what that school district is spending your money on. A lot of people want to get on these teachers, but to me, they're not asking the question, why is my school going to the state championship in basketball every year, but we're one of the worst schools in the state in reading?
Very good quote. Very good question.
Need to check that out and ask the right questions. I mean, and if you think that some teachers in some of the roughest, toughest schools in Chicago is making $100,000 a year, you're crazy.
Yeah, and that was something that I wanted to get into and ask her about. Like, there's been a lot of quotes and a lot of numbers that's been thrown out there about what teachers make, and I don't see why they're going on strike if they're doing mm-hmm. this and they're doing that. And a crazy number that was thrown out to me, I've been thrown four numbers. And, I mean, outside of you, who, you know, I know you, and I got a family member, aunt, who's a teacher. And one crazy number that was thrown to me was $78,000 a year.
That's supposed to be the average
that's
income.
That was supposed to be the average.
Nah.
At first, that was the average. Now, correct me, Jenny, am I wrong? Am I wrong? Is that the average?
I mean, that's ridiculous. And so my teachers never drove Escalades, BMWs, Jaguars. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's interesting that they said, oh, we're going to give the medium, which is, you know, $76,000 or $78,000. And it's like, is it possible for a teacher to make that much? Of course it's possible, but let's look at how many years of service I have to give.
You
think about a teacher who's been teaching for 15 years or 20 years or 30 years, but a teacher, first-year teacher, you're not even making close to that. You know, you're lucky if you're at a school that you're making $40,000 a year. You know, but then when you factor in the cost of living and your take-home pay, so it may seem like a lot, even $40,000, but when you really bring it home $29,000,
right.
You know, that you expected to live off that with a family of two or three.
Right.
You know, and so it's amazing the numbers. And I was like, well, if that's the truth, then I'm missing a few paychecks if that's the number we're supposed to be making.
Right.
You know, but I think it's a matter of, because the media is trying to portray that it's all about money. It is not all about money. It's not even a piece of it is about money, you know. And so I think about athletes, if the Bulls or the Lakers decided that we're going on strike for a better contract, we wouldn't even have all of this, you know. And so why is it that teachers are so disrespected in regards to their profession? The fact that we have to be on strike is not okay, you know. And so I think people need to start asking questions like, why are teachers on strike, you know, as a profession? That's ridiculous when every single other profession must go through a teacher first, you know. And so nowadays when you see kids and you say, what do you want to be when you grow up? They like a rapper, a celebrity, an actor or actress, a doctor, even lawyers are still out there. Teachers are like the last choice. Unless your parents or someone you know was a teacher, you're like, oh, my goodness, maybe if all else fail, I can teach.
Right.
Right.
You know, and it's like,
right.
And it's unfortunate. That's the mindset of our society. And so I think it's really more about being respected as a profession. You know, because you have ball players who discuss $1 million into contracts.
Yeah.
You know, and you think about that. I'm watching you play ball. But yet, I'm okay with my kid's teacher being outside on strike.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm saying go back into the classroom.
Point.
Yeah.
There you go. And real quick, the national average, this is the national average of a teacher's salary is $50,000. But that's the national average.
Right. Right. But, yeah, I we got a call coming in real quick, Jenny. So,
yeah. 760, you're on with the Truth Brothers. What's your name?
Drea, how y'all doing?
How you doing, Drea?
I'm fine. I have a question. I don't think I heard anybody ask this yet. What exactly are you on strike for? What are the teachers on strike for exactly? What is the issue?
All right. I will definitely say, like, it is a lot of different issues. And so, for example, I believe it was today, or actually Sunday, it was released. A tentative contract that highlighted like health care benefits, the school calendar, what it looked like, the fact that students will have books on the first day of classroom and not the second week of school, the fact that, you know, discussing the annual salary. And so I would say it's about probably like 200 articles that's being discussed. However, one of the reasons why the Chicago Teachers Union decided to stay on strike, because instead of receiving an actual contract or a tentative contract for the delegates to look at, they received just the framework. And so what that pretty means, instead of showing a contract of here's the bold print, here's the fine print, here's the bold print, here's the fine print, they just received all bulleted points. And so we all know that the bold print given and the fine print take it away. And so it's like, how can you expect teachers to sign an agreement when it's incomplete? And so that's one of the biggest things, you know, of the continuation for the strike. With so many things that are left unsaid. Or what about sick days? You know, what about maternity leave? I was reading actually an email talking about some of the things that haven't even been mentioned yet, you know, that we think about school closing. You know, what does that mean when you decide to close 100 schools and maybe even turn them to for-profit schools or charter schools? But what does that look like in our contract? And so I think some people are just, you know, so ready for the strike to be over. But what they have to realize is this is a contract for 4 years. You know, it's almost like having a car note. You know, so you want to make sure that not only are you signing something for your well-being, but for the future teachers that will be teaching next year and the year after next. And it's not even really about the air conditions in a building. This shouldn't be stuff we should have to strike over. It should be stuff that should be given The year is 2012. You know, I think of some of the stuff that we are asking for. And it's just like, we shouldn't be fighting for this in 2012. Based on the technology we have and the resources we have, this shouldn't be stuff. You know, the fact that we want all schools to start looking alike. You know, one school in the south side should be mirrored to a school in the north side.
Dig that.
And so I do ask everyone, you know, for everyone that's listening, to see the actual contract because it's actually out and it's open to the public. You can go to the CTU website, and that's CTUNET.com, and right under their blog section, they have the actual document. It's about 23 pages so far of the things they're proposing.
Okay. One thing that kind of jumped out at me while I was reading a million different articles about it, and I know they all don't encompass the truth.
Right.
What is this about, and please correct me, what is this about the teachers not wanting to be evaluated for performance based on the fact that they're saying the home life of the child and the community they live in, the atmosphere, plays a big part on performance at school. The teachers don't want to be evaluated for that. Are you familiar with that part?
I am familiar with that clause, and I think I always keep in mind I only believe about 15% of the media. But there is not a fact of teachers not want to be evaluated. It's a matter of, and it's not evaluations totally. It's a testing clause. And so they're saying that testing should only count for so much of a teacher's evaluation. A teacher's evaluation should be on teacher practices. It should be on observations, whether formal observations or informal observations of someone coming into the classroom and observing a teacher versus you're based in, for example, if you're based in 50% of me, of my job, on a one-day test. And so think about it. We know things can happen during a test. We know that students may get sick during a test. We know that there's other factors besides a one-day test that my job is now on the line. You know, and so it's not about the evaluations. It's about the testing of a clause in that evaluation. And so I know the media is saying that teachers don't want to be evaluated on, they don't want to be evaluated, but it's not the evaluation.
Right.
It's the testing piece of it.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay, because that kind of, and what about the extending of the school days? I'm hearing that the teachers have a problem with that as well, the extension of school days, and they want to be paid for that extension. Which is what I read. The one, I think it said, and forgive me, I'm not from Chicago. I don't live there, so I'm really in the dark here. Well, I think it said elementary was going to be extended 30 minutes. High school extended 30 minutes, and elementary extended an hour and 10 minutes, something like that. And the teachers want to be paid for that extension. What do you think about that? I mean, do you think 30 minutes extension is, you know, like something that should be on the table?
Yeah, we're going to let her answer. We're going to let her answer that, but we got to take a break first. So we're going to get this break out the way real quick, and then we will pick this back up. So just hold tight. Truth Brothers Radio.
Truth Brothers Radio.
I hear voices in my head. They counsel me. They understand. They talk to me. You got your rules and your religion, all designed to keep you safe. But when rules start getting broken, you start questioning your.
Truth Brothers Radio.
If you don't have an iPhone, I'd ask you what's wrong with you, but I already know. You're poor, or a loser, or a person who doesn't care about technology, which means you're either poor or a loser. We didn't even make this commercial to sell you an iPhone. We made it to mock you for being one of the have-nots. We are the Sneetches with stars upon thars, and you are one of the regular Sneetches. If you don't have an iPhone, honestly, good. In your face. If you don't have an iPhone, frankly, go fuck yourself.
Truth Brothers Radio.
Watch
Truth Brothers, Truth Brothers Radio. We're back, everybody. We're back with teacher, Miss Jenny Andrews. You still there holding in with us?
I'm still here. Thank you guys for having me on the line.
All right.
No problem. And the last question that was brought to you was about the longer school days.
Right.
And we wanted to, and the teachers getting paid for that. And if you want to give a rebuttal to that, you can.
And so I guess it's not necessarily even a rebuttal, but just enlightenment. And so I think what it is, and so teachers have already even agreed to a longer school day. And so I believe it's high school students go like 7.5 hours. Elementary school go, I believe, is 7 hours or 7 hours and 15 minutes. I'm not 100% sure of the logistic of each of the different grade levels.
Right.
But I think it's a matter of who wants to show up to work and not be compensated for it. And if you really look at a job of a teacher, when I first started teaching, I probably got to school at 6 a.m. and I left at 6 p.m. And that was just doing stuff in my classroom. Now, I may only got paid from, let's say, 8 to 4. And so the time I put in before work or after work, you don't get paid for that.
Right.
And so teachers work so many hours already with no extra pay. If you think about the report card comments you have to give, grading papers, grading tests, you know, meeting with parents, calling parents. These are things we are just doing, but no one is paying you for these things. And so we realize that it's part of our job. You know, you do have to go above and beyond because at the end of the day, it's for the students. But when you say, hey, I need you guys to stay longer. So instead of getting out at 3 o'clock, I need you to get out at 4 o'clock, which means that if you have a kid at home, I need you to hold off on being that child's parent, you know. And so now you're asking me to jeopardize my own family and stay at work and not receive pay for it or any compensation for it. And so I think that's where the problem came in, because I can't imagine any other profession where you would ask them to stay later and not get paid for it. And sometimes you do and sometimes you don't, but it's just a matter of, because we do so much, not every job have to take their job home. And I feel like that when I'm a teacher, I'm on 24 hours.
That's
and actually,
right.
I just had a former student call me tonight and say, hey, I got a math question. Can you help me with it? And this was at about 7:45. She was like, can you just really help me, Ms. Andrews, with this math problem right now? And, you know, if that's the case, I'm at work, you know. And so it's just so much that teachers already do in the behind-the-scenes work of bulletin boards and, you know, just the little things that we do and we don't get paid for it. But yeah, you act more of us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also,
let me ask you a question.
Go ahead.
Let me throw this question out
here.
I've been dying to ask this question. With media, local government, how much of this do you really think that they are taking advantage of your love of wanting to be a teacher and nurture and foster the development of kids? How much of that do you think they are just flat out taking advantage of?
Okay, with the media portion or?
With the media portion, the government, local government, that is.
Okay.
With them wanting you to stay longer, you know, have longer school days, and, you know, all the little innuendos you just mentioned, how much of that do you think they just, I think from what it looks like to me, you know, I've worked for a school district. I was not a teacher, but I have worked for a school district before, and I know a lot of what you say to be true. And it just seems like a lot of this is, you know, propaganda, if you will, for them to make themselves look better about this whole strike situation.
Absolutely. And I think even, you know, with the longer school day and just with the media involved, like I used to work at a school that was from 8 to 4. And so the kids went from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m., roughly about an 8-hour day.
Okay.
And so teachers started at like 7:30 to 4:15. And so when I think about that, I would say for me in my classroom or just in the school, discipline problems rose about at 2:30. So between 2:30 to 4, you're doing mostly write-ups at that time. And it's because even as people, we get restless after so many hours. And so the longer day was basically in regard to like, low performance on test scores. So because they're low performance on test scores, we're going to make students stay longer hours. But did that really solve the problem? You know, or is that even a problem? And I think we tried to think about a solution, a short-term solution to a long-term problem. You know, because I don't think, you know, when you deal with different types of neighborhoods, you do have to, you do incur different situations that you have to address before you even get to teaching algebra. You know, if a kid is dealing with an issue at home, that issue is still on that child's mind.
Yeah.
Or issue in the neighborhood, that issue is still on that child's mind. I know because I was one of those students. You know, so until my teacher say, hey, what's wrong? Let's talk about this first. I wasn't trying to read a book right away. You know, I had some issues that I wanted to talk about, you know, that I was dealing with socially. And so I think sometimes, so I don't think the longer school day was necessarily the right solution to the low test score. I think it's something deeper than that. You know, and I, and at the end, you know, it's, it is propaganda of, who makes the most money? You know, I always believe that the person that makes the most money get to publish the most press.
As you're saying that, I got a comment from listener Scott Wolf, and I want y'all to check this out because this is pretty cool. Because as she was talking about the compensation, I've heard a lot of stuff in the press and a lot of stuff on Facebook, especially how they were saying, you know, hey, they just glorified babysitters and this, that, and all of that.
Yeah.
So Scott Wolf say teachers' hefty salaries are driving up taxes, and they only work about 9 or 10 hours. They only work about 9 or 10 months a year. It's time we put things in perspective and pay them for what they do, babysit.
Wow.
We can get that for less than minimum wage. That's right. Let's give them $3 an hour. And only the hours that they work, not any of the silly planning time or any of the time they spend before or after school.
You need
that would be about $19.50 a day, and we're talking from like 7:45 to 3 o'clock with a 45-minute lunch. That equals to about 6.5 hours. Each parent should pay $19.50 a day for those teachers to babysit their children. Now, how many students do they teach each day? Yeah, about 30. So that's
37.
Okay, well, he says 30.
Oh,
so we're going to go $19.50 times 30. So that's $585 a day. However, let's remember, they only work about 180 days a year. I'm not going to pay them for any vacations. So let's see. That's 585 times 180.
There you go.
That's $105,300 per year. What about?
Well, I love babysitting money then, if that's the case.
Right, exactly. Now, what about those special education teachers and the ones with master's degrees? Well, we should pay them minimum wage, $7.75. Let's round it off to $8 an hour. That would be $8 times 6.5 hours times 30 children times 180 days. That would be $280,800 a year. Wait a minute. There's got to be something wrong here. The average teacher's salary nationwide is $50,000. So that's $50,000. Divided by 180 days with $277.77 per day times 30 students equals $9.25 for 6.5 hours, which equals around $1.42 an hour. Actually,
wow.
Pretty good damn deal.
There you go.
So
wow.
Now, that goes out to Scott Walker and some of the idiots in Wisconsin who wanted to blame teachers and teachers' unions for overwhelming the taxes and all of that. You're getting a good deal because I think a lot of these teachers would take the babysitting part if they could.
Right, especially watching 30-some kids a day.
Right.
But they might be getting a good deal, but the kids aren't.
Well, no, he's just saying that would destroy your tax base.
No, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
And to go back into that, I wanted to ask Jenny something real quick. You got a lot of people out here now that are against this teacher strike for a lot of reasons. Some of them because they say the teachers are being selfish And I'm gonna be, in my personal opinion, I think that they're looking at a way of getting rid of their kids, and even how the way that they even said the strike started, they're mad at teachers because they waited to the day of to strike, like that Sunday night, not knowing if they were going to go on strike that Monday morning. What would you have to say to the people who have those type of ideas or have that type of mindset?
One thing I definitely would say, and it's interesting that especially to the people who have never been in education, I first encourage you to go visit a classroom. You can come visit my classroom if you like, you know, but definitely come visit a classroom and see what a teacher does. And when you see what a teacher do all day, and you say, wow, I never would have thought. And so sometimes people say things out of ignorance, and it's really because they do not know. And so they allow the media to give them information, and they don't realize who's always controlling the media. And so I definitely encourage them to do their own homework, you know, look at the contract, look at the different articles that we're bargaining right now and asking for, and really make a sound judgment of would you buy this. And so if they really saw the deal that teachers are really just trying to be handed now, they would say, I wouldn't even buy this. I mean, I have kids who, like sixth graders, who can read this and say, this is ridiculous.
Right.
And so now you're expecting educators to look at this and just jump on it and agree. And I think, you know, everything has to be done in a certain time in a certain manner. So sometimes we can't always get you an immediate decision. You know, I was listening to Karen Lewis who did a press conference, and she like, you know, yesterday I ended at 1:30 in the morning, you know, from the negotiation table at 1:30 in the morning.
Right.
And so when you think about that, it's like, well, how fast do you want a decision? Because truly we are negotiating to the very end in order to make a deal happen. And so even that Sunday night, you know, people were still at the negotiation table. And when they realized that they couldn't come to agreement, they had to tell parents, okay, there will be no school tomorrow. You know, so I think it's not a matter of just we're trying to hide things or we're trying to just surprise people. It's a matter of we're really working hard until the very last moment, and we said we have to go back home. Because I guarantee you, teachers want to get back into their classrooms. Like, there's nothing I love more than educating students. And so it is painful when you have to pick it for what you believe in. And sometimes you don't always see the fruits of your labor immediately. But you just got to know, I'm doing this for a good cause. I'm doing this for an amazing cause. Because right. At the end of the day, it's truly about the students. And so I also think about that our working conditions are your students' learning conditions.
Big,
you should want us to be in the best room possible. You should want us to have the best school possible because your kids have to be educated here.
Right.
You know, and some people say, just get back into the classroom. Are you sure you want us to go back into the classroom? Because
right.
That's really not the class you want us to go back into. I walked past the classroom the other day, and I believe it was 42 students in a classroom with one teacher.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, and that was before the strike. And
mm-hmm.
So you think about things like this, and then you, how many kids are getting individualized learning with 42 kids in a classroom?
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, I just tell parents and everyone, just be patient. Like, we are getting the best possible deal for students. You know, and as parents, I know you have to make hard decisions for your students, and that's the same with teachers. We have to make some hard decisions in order to make sure our students have a better future because they are the next generation. And I don't want to teach crap and then blame them for the economy 10 years later or 20 years later because they didn't have a calculator in my classroom or they didn't have the resources that's available to some students and not others. It is
right.
Not fair. You know, I ran into a parent not too long ago, and she was upset because, you know, she wanted to put her kid in a private school because she felt like the public school just wasn't doing what she thought it should be doing, which it wasn't. But the problem was she couldn't afford it.
Right.
So even though she went to the interview and her daughter got accepted into the school, she looked and saw the tuition bill and couldn't afford it.
Yeah.
And so, but it's my thing is that you should have never had to leave a public school just because you wanted your daughter to have more resources.
Right.
The resources should have been provided at that school.
Right.
All right.
But to get into real quick, to get in, you got a couple of comments real quick on for your one person, Miss Tony Breedlove. How you doing? Says she wanted to commend you and your work and your efforts to teach our children. Her hat goes off to you, and that means a lot.
She waving now.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Also, people got to realize, you know, when you start hearing in the press and in the media about how everything is the teachers, you need to look back at the three fingers that's pointing back at them. They're dealing with Rahm Emanuel, and he is turning out to be such a bully. When Drea asked that question about the longer school days, I'm a proponent for the longer school days, but the twisted way that he tried to divide and conquer them into taking it was bogus. He told them, no, we don't have any extra money to pay y'all about the longer day. We just want you to do it. But any school that do it, we're going to give the school extra money. We're going to give you this little extra money over here if you go ahead and take it. That's no way to negotiate with something. If you believe in the longer school day and you it's a good idea, put it on the table and work it out with the teachers union and make that thing happen. You don't have to twist and try to provoke them and split them off and divide them into getting your way.
Right.
The same thing he's doing with this deal. If they just came across a tentative deal Sunday, how did you figure that they was going back to work the next
Monday,
day? They're
going
to have to sit there and look at it, and then they got to present it to the union. They
got
to present it to their members.
Right, but he's not. Correct me if I'm wrong, anybody. I don't think he just is he holding the contract as like bait, or he just like cradling it to see, okay, y'all want it. You have to. I don't know if he's trying to. The longer he holds it, the more he's going to take out of it. I'm trying to get what do you think his mindset is when it comes to you guys and your contract.
And honestly, I don't know. And because when you think about it, you sound like, really? And the first thing pops up is idiot. Then I say, okay, well, maybe he's not an idiot. Maybe he's just ignorant to the fact, and then he doesn't know. But you have to think, it have to be something truly wrong with a person in order to think that this is just going to happen. And teachers are just going to say, all right, we assign it. We haven't seen it, but we assign it.
Right.
And so it's like, why are you hiding it? You know, if you wanted teachers to make a deal by Sunday, the contract should have been completed by Sunday. It really should have been completed probably Saturday morning. You know,
right.
So you can't just give teachers a framework, which really mean like bulletin points or an outline of something, without giving them a complete contract. So you think about these things and you just, and I'm shocked. You're like, wow, are you the mayor? You know,
but
it's unfortunate. And then I also thought about everything that been accomplished in our society have come through fighting, you know, because this is no big deal considering there was a time when blacks were treated as unequal, you know. So at the end of the day, I expected something like this to happen. You know, if we can sit for 400 years in slavery because of the color of our skin, I expect something like this to happen then, you know. And so this is our moment to say, we the people, that's what it says, we the people, not that we, Rahm Emanuel, we the mayor, no, we the people. And so that's why I love the Chicago Teacher Union for standing up and saying, we're not taking this deal. And I truly don't believe, you know, anyone expected a strike to happen. Think about it. It hasn't happened in 25 years.
That's
right.
You know, so I don't think anyone expected people to still come together. And so I'm so glad, and I hope that this, you know, inspire other people to come together. And while we were out rallying, there were so many, you know, kids out there, and I was like, this is history right now. And so I'm hoping that they learn from this, that you don't have to take anything just because the government said it.
That's right.
Or just because the mayor said it. You don't have to take that, you know. And so that's when I get on fire, when I see the kids out there rallying and saying, you know, I support my teacher. We don't get that often. You know, we don't get the community and the city rallying around you. I remember on this past Saturday after the rally, you know, I was walking around with my Chicago Teacher Union shirt on, and I went out to eat, and you know, people started asking me questions, you know, like, this must be what celebrities feel like, you know. And we don't get that, and we should get that on a daily basis when you're dealing with 30 kids and one teacher. I was like, I haven't met the doctor yet who sees 30 patients at one time and have to give a diagnosis.
That's
you know, but that's what we're doing. Lawyers take one case at a time. You know, doctors see one patient at a time. But yet we expect teachers to educate 30 different minds at one time.
I think they take your profession lightly. I think a lot of people take your profession and what you do very, very lightly.
818-514-1202. Sorry, Devon, you want to get that out there?
Yeah, that's no problem. Like I was saying, I think they take your profession and what you guys do very lightly. I could never teach. It's not that I don't want to. I wouldn't. I don't have the patience, and I don't have the I have the charisma, but not the patience.
Yeah, you know, when she said earlier how some people need to come visit a classroom. You know, I don't understand that because at one point we all visited the classroom. Mm-hmm. We all went through the same school system.
Yep.
And I had teachers who were very dedicated, who were tired, and you know, we don't give them the gratitude that they're due. I mean, teachers have been buying stuff for their students for years because, you know, you can only buy so many crayons and all of that before they lose them all.
Right.
And a lot of the papers, the construction paper,
everything.
And the glue. They're usually footing the bill on all of that, but we got a call. Hold on. We're going to go ahead and get to them. Hey, Tony, you on with the truth, brother?
I don't know.
Hey there. I just want to say that I love your guest.
Huh.
I love her. She talks with so much passion, and I commend you for doing the job that you do, and I want you to continue to fight. Because without it, these children are going to fail. And the society is going to fail.
Wow.
So I commend you. I really do. And I'm going to go back and listen to the show because I just got in not long ago.
Rally, right?
It's Tony.
Definitely. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for that. And I truly appreciate that. So thank you so much, you know, for saying those kind words. We definitely don't get that often. So
you get
I'm
truth.
Just humbled the fact that, you know, someone is calling in to say thank you.
Right. And they're not from here. That's what's the person who just called here isn't from Illinois.
Cali.
They're from California.
Yeah.
So you guys are
this
reaching
nationwide.
So
worldwide.
A lot of people are really here and they're with you. So, you know, one thing I wanted to get you to say before we actually lose time with you is that a lot of times I know a lot of people are saying, man, the teachers are saying they're doing this for the kids, they're doing this for the kids, they're striking for the kids. Explain to them how you're striking for the kids, because they don't see what you're actually fighting for the kids. They just see you're sitting outside of a school. Explain to these people how you're fighting for the kids.
We're definitely fighting for the kids because I believe that everything in our tentative agreement, and you can definitely check it out on the CTU website, everything in that agreement either directly or indirectly relates to a kid. So, like, for example, you know, one thing is that we wanted to increase the teaching supply reimbursement to at least $250. Now, for me personally, I want to say last year I spent about $800 in just items for the kids, whether it was trying to provide snacks, because I know sometimes kids don't have snacks. I try to have snacks in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
And so if it's, you know, Expo markers, crayons, paper. And so we're asking for just $250 of reimbursement when a teacher spends that in probably the first week of teaching. You know, and so everything, or the fact that we're asking for more counselors in the school, we're asking for more clinicians in the school,
mm-hmm.
all these things we're asking for will impact a student. You know, the fact that we want books on the first day and not the first week or the third week of school. You know, no child should have to sit there with no books. And so sometimes it's because maybe a school budget. that they can't always order new books, but then you have a kid who has no books, but yet they're still expected to perform.
Yeah, it never changes. You know what? Real quick, when I was a kid, when I was in eighth grade, man, I went to Chicago Public Schools too. I went to what was considered one of the worst schools in the city at the time. It was called Brennan Elementary. It's now known as Alex Haley School, which it's probably better than it was when I went there. Because when I went there, man, in eighth grade, man, I was reading out of a science book that was talking about the brand new invention of television.
There you go.
I'm serious.
I believe you. That's what
this brand new.
I believe you. Yeah. And you know, I will say this. Like, for example, in one of our articles 6-7, it says, and I'm looking right at the tentative agreement. It says, whenever possible, mathematics classes should be assigned to rooms with adequate chalkboard or dry erase board and math charts and graphs. And it's like, why should we have to be fighting for that? Why should that even be in part of our contract?
Mm.
You know, so stuff like that, that does impact a classroom when I'm trying to teach something I have no teaching tools to teach you with.
Right.
You know, or the fact that no more than 40 students should be tested in a classroom.
Wow.
You know, but this is stuff that we're arguing for, and people don't realize. They think, oh, they just want more money. Truly, they couldn't pay a teacher what a teacher was really worth.
That's,
you know, right. And I think about my teachers, you know. My teachers have truly made me who I am. And I've been in Chicago Public Schools my entire life, and because teachers poured into me, it's only that's the reason who I am today, you know.
Yeah.
And so
I just
want to give that back and pour into other students. So we are definitely doing this for the kids. We're not saying, hey, every single teacher should be given a BMW on the first day of school. And, you know, so things like that is not in our contract. We're not saying that we want $1 million or we want some endorsement.
You just want the supply.
And so I think sometimes we're looking at the wrong contracts.
Yeah.
You know, and we're arguing over those instead of looking at some other contracts that's out there.
Yeah. I mean, and so for those who had that type of idea, because I know a lot of them are listening, she just explained to you how the teachers are fighting for the kids. So
right.
If that doesn't sum it up for you, I don't know what else a person can say to tell you of how it's not just about money, or it's not really about money.
There
it's necessities. These are things that you should be given in order to inform your children. But
there you go. You have been a fantastic guest, Jenny. You are. Everybody here is just stunned and very impressed. And real quick, with about 2 minutes left, and real quick, I want everybody to go around. I want to go around the room and everybody give it up to a teacher that had a real big influence in your life. Just one. We'll go with you first.
With
I know who you're going to go with.
I got two, man. Of course, I got Red Summer, man. She really guided Miss Muhammad. She really guided my mindset. And she took me out of a – anybody who knew me back in my day, Jenny, would know that I'm not – I used to be, I got to give a big applause to that, and I got to give it up to a male math teacher that I had named Mr. Ellis, who actually, man, he took me and showed me manhood.
I would have to say it would have to be my English teacher in high school, Mr. Lawrence Walker. Just beautiful soul, beautiful person, that mother figure that you kind of miss nowadays in schools. So had a very big impact in my life, very encouraging, and just no substitute for it.
Yeah, I want to give it up to Myrna Hill. I had her in high school, and she was my distributive education teacher, man. Advertising and all the screwed up commercials you hear on Truth Brothers Radio,
right.
I can draw a line back to her. She's the reason.
Right.
For all of that.
All right, Jenny, I'm going to have to come down there, man, and strike with y'all. Hopefully I won't get a chance to. Y'all will be back.
Well, I hope we're definitely back in the classroom soon. You know, I miss my babies right now.
Right.
And so thank you so much for just having me on your show. I truly appreciate it. And just support a teacher.
Thank you.
And on that note, we're going to go ahead and get on out. We're going to get into the second hour. We're going to get into the school closings with our principal and educator. Y'all gonna enjoy this one, so we're gonna make it happen. Truth Brothers Radio.
Mm-hmm.
Truth Brothers Radio.
Perry, the man who brought you Jesus Is, presents Mama Saw Jesus in the Toaster, the new hit stage play everyone's talking about at the new old rebuilt Regal Theater next to the Currency Exchange down the street from Three Fifths Bank, the bank for color. It's the story of how one woman got up to make toast and found Jesus.
Oh! Oh, my God! Jesus, is that you in there?
You'll laugh, you'll cry, you'll bring butter. Jet Magazine says, this some bull here. King Magazine says, I've never seen so many big asses in my life. And The Final Call says, it's cooning at its best. Starring Loretta Devine as Mama. Also, Countess Vaughn from the Parkers. You know him as Waldo. Sean Harrison from Family Matters. R&B sensation Howard Jewett as the light-skinned singer. Delicious from Flavor of Love. Wendy Williams as Bitter Mama.
How you doing? It's a man, baby.
And in a triumphant return to the stage, Cisco as the Dragon Chaser.
Came looking for man's butt.
And as Jesus. Bullethead from the Steve Harvey Show. That's Mama Saw Jesus in the Toaster at the new old rebuilt Regal Theater, sponsored by Three Fifths Bank, the bank for color. Get your tickets now. Bring the whole family.
Man, I saw this 4 times. I still don't get it. Who the hell is Sean Harris?
A Shelly Perry production.
Rain Jesus is free, right?
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
Truth Brothers Radio. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the second hour of Truth Brothers. I'm Ray.
And I'm Devon.
And we are the Truth Brothers. The number to give us a call is 818-514-1202. That's 818-514-1202.
And as always, you guys know you can leave us an email at wewanttruth@att.net. And truth is spelled T-R-U-F.
And we have the Facebook, I'm sorry, we have the Blog Talk chat room live and going on for your questions and comments.
There you go. And we're going to go ahead and jump into our second hour topic now of all these school closings in Chicago and what does it mean and what is the effect it's going to have on kids. And we got a very special guest here, and I loved his name back in the first hour, and I'm very sorry about that. But he is our principal and educator, Rashawn Franklin. Welcome to the show, bro.
There you go. Thank you, thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, real Barry White on this.
Yeah, he did. He got real. He got real smooth.
Yeah.
Got a little rum and coke in his glass.
I don't always drink beer.
There you go.
That's what those
Becky. Thanks for joining us tonight, man. Appreciate that.
Yeah. So, you know what? Let's just kind of jump into the meat of the thing right away, and I want to get your impressions on closing 54 schools. The impact that's got to have on the city has got to be enormous, and these are like the largest school closings in the history of America. And that's just it. I want your opinion on that. Just tell me what you think as a experienced educator. And is it a good idea, bad idea? Can they pull it off? Will it work or what?
I think the thing you really have to understand is that, as you even posted, once you close neighborhood schools, children have to cross into different neighborhoods where they are not accustomed to which gangs in those territories. And just even common safe passing away from your own neighborhood, number one, it's a safety issue. So whenever you're talking about education, you start off talking about safety. Mm-hmm. So when you look at what's going to happen next year in Chicago, I think there is going to be an increase in violence and issues that those children have to deal with, because I'm not sure that the mayor, the board, the decision makers are taking safety as number one priority. This is obviously a financial decision. As you close schools, you can cut salary, you cut operating costs, so there's a financial benefit, but what is the price that you put on education of a child, let alone the life of a child?
Okay. And, yeah, let's matter of fact, let's get something kind of straight right away. Just because you cross in the gang territories, and some people out there might believe, well, if your kid isn't in a gang, what does he have to worry about? It kind of doesn't matter. Even if you're not in a gang, if your neighborhood is discipled and you come from that neighborhood and you got to go to school in Vice Lord territory, they don't care that you're not a disciple. You come from that area, that automatically marks you right away. They're not going to – that whole, oh, I don't belong to a gang, I'm not in this.
Neutral.
I'm neutral, right. That don't matter.
Doesn't matter. It's rare. It's very, very rare that you find where a community or whatever would protect one kid. And it does happen. It does happen
in
certain
from their neighborhood.
But the thing
is,
see, a lot of times, and we're getting off, but a lot of times within those core gang, I guess you want to say core gang leaders, they do have that, look, nobody is allowed to touch this kid. Nobody. And they do have certain situations, but that's very rare.
Right.
For the most part, Ray, you're right with what you say. I mean, a lot of times, I don't really think when it came down to these school closings that they took a lot of these things into consideration. I think for the most part, they took the money, how much money they can save, how much of a tax write-off or whatever you want to say it would be for the schools. My question is though. What would they change? I don't even want to say private schools, but with them merging certain schools like this, are they really concerned about overcrowding the schools, or what are they going to do to accommodate that? If you have any opinion on that,
I think the plan is to take smaller schools and merge them with another smaller school or a school that's performing well. The net difference is going to be an increase in class sizes. So if a school has say 16, 17 children in a classroom in the second grade class, they'll pair it up with another school. And so now that teacher is working with 33, 34, maybe 35 children. So the amount of time they can focus on each child is going to decrease immensely. And those parents, you know, it's going to be a lot tougher for those parents to have connections with the teachers, because that's way on the other side of town. So when you drop in and talk, that becomes a plan I have to make instead of I'm just going to drop by the school, which is close to my house.
Right. Now, you know what? I got a real problem with that whole theory that the school board and the mayor laid out about, well, this is a underutilized school. I thought that as a teacher, you want a small class size. That's more time that can be focused on your kid. And I thought that when you look at like KIPP schools or other charter schools or private schools, a Catholic school, the class sizes are very small. Mm-hmm. They're not rocking 30 kids, 35 kids to a classroom. And that's one of the benefits of having this private school education, because the teacher can focus in and have more time to focus on your kid and what he or she may need. So when they say that, okay, we're going to close this school or we're going to merge these two schools because we've got under-enrollment, and the under-enrollment was most likely caused by all the foreclosures in that poor neighborhood, why would that be a good reason to close a school? I mean, you're a principal. Wouldn't you want your class sizes to be small if you could help it?
I don't think there's any debate about that. Everything you're saying is right, Ray. Again, like Devin was saying, it's a financial decision. And I think the other part of this is that Chicago has a history of not focusing on neighborhood schools.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the last 10 years, I taught in Chicago maybe 13 years ago in a neighborhood school on the west side. Our school was always ignored because all of our students wanted to leave and go to Whitney Young.
Mm-hmm.
This was before the Disney School or the Peyton School.
Right.
But the issue is until you correct and address the entire system, to have one standout magnet school or a special charter school, you really haven't done anything special until you can say every child that goes to school in Chicago will get a quality education. That is our focus. That is our goal. So they're not really thinking about the impact on those kids in the neighborhood school as long as they have enough of those top-notch schools to say, hey, we're making it happen here. I really feel the powers that be are willing to let those kids in neighborhood schools suffer.
All right, Truth Brothers Radio. We're sitting here talking with our principal and educator, Rashawn Franklin. And did you have a question, Candace?
No.
Oh.
Well, real quick. This is a rumor that was going out there. I don't believe it, and it's just somebody had told me to ask this question, that during the teacher strike that we were talking about earlier this year, that it was put into that new contract that the teachers knew somewhat about all these school closings. Now, I don't believe it. I don't think the teachers knew, and they were supposed to keep a hush about it. I've asked one of my the person who we had on here for that show about it. They said it was a lie, and I just want to confirm it again with you. Do you believe or have you heard anything about the teachers knowing that a lot of these schools were going to close around our area in that contract or when they were discussing it during the holdout?
I don't know what's in the contract. I haven't seen it, haven't read it, but I remember there was conversation about school closing. So I think where the rumor comes in is that it may have been discussed at the bargaining table.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean that the teachers union actually agreed to it. Because at the end of the day, they don't have any authority to block that
exactly.
or to stop it.
Right.
Exactly.
Okay.
And yeah, everybody knows that they were going to close schools. They've been doing it for the past
right.
couple of years, but
this
they've
magnitude.
Never done any right.
Right. That's
they've
what
never
was,
done anything
like
on this scale
exodus.
Before.
That's what
it.
I was saying. Because
right.
the question that came to me that they knew, and like I said, it was a rumor going around, and it was proposed that they knew that it was going to be at least 40 to 50 schools closing.
Right. Well,
and
you know,
you've
also got this right wing. Tea Party effort that they're going into the city on this mass level trying to organize because they like the school closings because this is supposedly smaller government and they like corporate schools and they think that is okay. Matter of fact, I'm gonna ask you, do you believe that schools should have to turn a profit?
I think anytime you have a for profit school, you're mixing your mission.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
If you and obviously taxes pay for public schools, but the difference is if you you call in a landscaper and you ask that landscaper to design some shrubbery for you, it could be the most hideous thing in the world. And if you're paying for it, that is what that landscaper is going to do. So when it comes to for-profit schools, their main focus is making money.
Exactly.
Their main focus is telling you what you want to hear because if you're paying tuition and you're a parent. Well, you know what, Ray, I may not want to tell you all the issues that's going on with your child because you may get upset with me
and right.
want to take your child out of my
exactly,
school.
Exactly, right.
So it's more to my benefit to sugarcoat things, to keep you happy with the school and not tell you about the real deal issues that we need to deal with.
And it has been proven now. It's a lot of empirical data out there that shows that for the most part, pound for pound, these for-profit schools and these private schools do about the same, if not a little bit worse, than public schools, about pound for pound. They do about exactly the same.
Especially when you look at the data over time.
Yeah.
When you get that first buzz and that first blip, you know, one thing that people outside the industry don't understand is charter schools and magnet schools, those teachers are required to work a longer day, which is good. They get more training, more professional development. A lot of them have selective enrollment or specific terms. So if a child has a disability, as a principal, you can say, well, this child is not going to attend school here. So that child can go
exactly.
out. So that's going to
exactly.
affect the data. And I think when you compare schools, you have to compare it apples to apples. So
right.
with
right,
those
right,
long working right. hours and the way that they are overworking those teachers, they have a lot more turnover. So they don't have any institutional memory where they can say over the last 7 years that they have sets and families, sets of children from the same family that they know. When
right.
you come in and say, hey, yeah, I know you have my youngest baby, that's something they don't always have in those schools because the turnover is so high. What I think the big difference between a charter school and a public school, just looking at it from the public school perspective, is they are much more effective in the marketing aspect. They do a much better job publicizing what they're about with glossy pamphlets and commercials and here's what we're doing. But the nuts and bolts grind of it, walking into a classroom, and schools I've been in, the charter schools really aren't doing dynamic things that aren't happening in the public schools. They just have more of a media outreach and more polished marketing people to really publicize what they're doing so it looks good.
There you go. 818-514-1202 is the number if you want to call in and give Mr. Franklin a question. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who may not be buying what you're selling right now because they believe that charter schools are just the be-all, end-all. And the UNO schools are very popular in Chicago, and they are growing like gangbusters. And I just don't understand how you could make an argument on one hand to close certain schools, and you talk about the budget, and we need to close these schools. At the same time, you're handing over money to these schools like UNO to grow and open more schools. You can't have it both ways. I don't believe you can anyway.
One thing I just can't wrap my head around. It was one of those things where you just got hit. You know, I remember the way it impacted me when I heard 54 schools were going to be closed. So, you know, just being from Chicago, having attended Chicago public schools, and to hear something like that all at one time, I mean, this is not anything that just happened overnight.
Right.
You
right,
know,
right.
So for someone, do you have a call?
Yeah, go ahead, finish
the okay, segment. For someone to get that type of information about so many schools closing at one time is devastating. What I guess I can't wrap my head around is why a more strategic plan couldn't have been put into place. Because, see, now you have all these parents who are going to be in a panic. And, you know, coming from, you know, the south side of Chicago and the crime the way it is, you know, now we're shipping kids way out of their way, mm-hmm. you know. And majority of these killings are babies getting hit that are not intended targets because people can't shoot. Or, you know what I'm saying, they're just
Absolutely. Totally
just reckless. So with that being said, now you're taking your child, you send them way across the way, they're tired going to school, they got a long trip coming back home.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's got to be there to meet the kids. It just seems so ridiculous. So instead of closing 54 schools at one point in time, do you think something could have been done to where maybe they've taken section, you know what I mean? Like maybe start with maybe 5 to 10 schools and gradually make this progression. Was it so dire, in your opinion, that it had to be done in this fashion?
Well, not knowing the numbers, what I do know from the outside looking in is that Chicago has a very aggressive mayor who's not a slow fix kind of person. You know, his role in Chicago is well known. He was supposed to be the president's pit bull.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that he's the type of leader that throws caution to the wind. And if there's some collateral damage, which is our children, on his path to his ultimate political.
Okay, Truth Brothers Radio. Sorry about it. We had a little technical glitch there.
Was that
Yeah, no, they just dropped out. Come on back.
Yeah.
They probably everything just threw them off. That's
you were just
all.
Calling in the queue. Call back. We'll be able to liven your mic up and get you in if you had a question for the principal here.
Yeah, you know, I totally agree with what you're saying, and you know, we said it again on a couple of shows back that you know everything isn't supposed to be for profit. I mean, your hospitals shouldn't be for profit. Your hospitals are there to help people. That shouldn't be for profit. Your schools shouldn't be for profit. I believe your electrical grid and your utility system should not be for profit. That's supposed to be something to make the country stronger and safer, and you know, all this everything ain't supposed to be for profit. But we got our caller back. 708, you're on with the Truth Brothers. What's your name?
Hi, this is Melanie.
Hi,
my name is Melanie.
How you doing, Melanie?
Hey, turn your radio down.
Hi, my name is Melanie.
Still there?
I'm still here. Thank you.
Okay, what's your question?
Listen, I just wanted to comment and then also put a question. Even though I do and have heard about the school closings that will take place in Chicago, they have not already done so for this year. And yes, I do agree that it is very devastating, especially for the students in that community as well as the parents in that community. But I also want to throw this out to Mr. Franklin to see what his kind of response and his thoughts are on this. Because as an educator, when they think about closing those schools, there are myriad reasons why that occurs. Whether or not they publicize what the climate was in that school, what the suspension rate was, did they have parent volunteers, parent support, what was the absence rate, how were those grades doing, what actually was going on in the school. And did that also play a big role in the reason why those particular schools were chosen to be closed? And I wanted to know what his thoughts are on those factors that also can contribute to a lot of those issues that do arise within the particular schools, whether it's in the community or in those particular school district areas, and how important he thinks that those pieces could have played a part in them actually deciding to close those schools.
What?
Wow.
That's a real good question.
Yeah, that's a lot of meatball. There you go.
First thing I'll say is that obviously I think that they did look at underperforming schools, and I don't even know the complete list of names of schools that are being closed, but underperforming schools and schools that have a history of issues would obviously be the first ones to target. But I think my concern is that it's not necessarily for the children. Those schools are easier to target because they probably have lower parental involvement, less flack that the administrators will get as they close those schools. And I think what I'd really like to see is proof and evidence that they have a plan as they close these schools, that they are planning for success, because sometimes schools are closed without a plan to ensure that the children going to the other schools are more successful. I mean, if you look at a school that's being closed, tracking the student performance at the school they're currently at, and as they go to a new school, are they doing better? You know, that's a question that needs to be answered, because usually after decisions made, administration and the public doesn't require that of the mayor or of the school board to prove that their decision was effective and to really review the data on it. It's just all the schools closed and we move on from it.
Okay. And then just the other piece to that, too, is even, and I'm not sure if it's actually been finalized at this point, but say they come back because there has been, you know, a lot of riff out there in reference to the schools closing, and say they decide not to close some of them. I'm not sure where they're at with this at this point. But what would they need to do in order to make sure that if those schools do not close, that there is a difference that is made? Because the bottom line is the education of the children. And I think that that's one of the big pieces that is missing, because if there's so much and so many other underlying factors that have been going on within those schools that we don't know about,
What
is going to change if those schools, some of those schools, stay open in order to make sure that, even as you talked about earlier, the safety of the children are first and foremost. And I think that that is, in my mind, one of the biggest pieces. And the other question to that is, if the schools do not, say the schools do close and the students are then rerouted to the other schools, have they discussed putting in additional adults, putting in additional assistance, putting in some more programs? Has anything of that nature been discussed in order to make sure that the students then will have a fighting chance to improve based upon the reason why they closed the schools in the first place?
Yep. Well, I think you make a really good point. No matter whether they reopen those schools or table that decision, I think one thing that has to happen in Chicago and actually across the country is that the teachers unions and the administration need to start working more closely together. And I think what you see in Chicago coming off the heels of that strike, there's not a spirit of collaboration. There's a lot of infighting going on where teachers are afraid of retribution and whether it's legitimate or not, I think once you have a spirit of collaboration, people want to do more. They're willing to go above and beyond and making sure that the needs of children are met, where it's not just a spirit of almost like a gotcha mentality, where there's no teamwork, there's no collaboration, people aren't committing unified to the benefit of the children. Everyone's saying, I'm going to do my job. You know, an education is an industry where it can't just be a job. It has to be a calling. It has to be a mission. So truly looking at what those issues are in those schools that may be underperforming and putting a plan in place would be a better alternative, and maybe bringing in some external partners, some universities or some outside coaches to work with the staff and being really clear about the expectations. Because when I taught on the west side of Chicago, the one thing I always remembered is that the school I was in had a terrible reputation, but I worked with some of the most phenomenal kids that I ever have. But I also can say as a teacher, I had a really terrible administration that really demoralized the staff. People didn't want to come to work, and they really were just there for the kids, which is where it starts. But when the principal would say, hey, let's do something, the teachers look at the principal and say, no, we're just going to do what we need to for kids because there wasn't any camaraderie.
Dig that.
I want to thank the caller, Melanie, for chiming in with her questions.
Yeah, we're going to go ahead and take a quick break. And we'll come back. We'll get more into this with Principal Franklin, Truth Brothers Radio.
Truth Brothers Radio.
I really think the war on terror is a bunch of bullshit. Just a poor excuse for you to use up on your bullets. How much money does it take to really make a full clip? 9/11, building 7, did they really fool it? And a bunch of other cover-ups. Your shout, you should was the first to go with bunch of cuts. If you think that hurts, then wait, here comes the...
Hello, this is Candace, producer of Truth Brothers Radio, here to inform you of a global epidemic that has afflicted millions of people throughout the ages. FUD, fucked up dumb disease. It starts at birth and progressively gets worse as the person ages. Everyday people that you know suffer from FUD, like that guy at the grocery store, that girl that you work with, that weird kid that rides your school bus every day.
Oh, look at his head.
People that you know and love. Admit it, there is definitely someone you know and love who suffers from FUD. Famous celebrities such as Tyra Banks, Reggie Miller, Ray Allen, Forest Whitaker, Steven Seagal, Val Kilmer, Rosie O'Donnell, Paula Deen are plagued with having FUD. Many FUD sufferers live in denial by stating that they just have a lot on their mind, but it's simply not true. For just 72 cents a day, you can help control FUD by providing these FUD victims with the necessary items, such as extra large hats, helmets, scarves, paper bags, to help these people cope with this incurable disease. Won't you help support Truth Brothers in our never-ending fight to control FUD and make a difference by calling 888-BIG-HEAD. That's 888-244-4323. Stop staring. Start caring. FUD. Just give a damn.
Brothers Radio.
I don't even know what that means.
No one knows what it means, but it's provocative.
No, it's not. It's
get the people going.
Hey,
Brothers, True Brothers Radio, and we are back with our second hour topic discussing the Chicago Public School closings. And we are here this evening with Mr. Rashawn Franklin.
Hello.
All right. And I got a question for you. How come closing or reorganizing a school is never as simple as saying, hey, we got a school over here that's in the bottom echelon and it's doing very poorly. Why don't we just take a look at what they're doing here at our best school and just emulate what they're doing across town over here? How come it's never that simple?
Fair question, but a really difficult answer. It's not just a Chicago issue. Across the country, everyone is still looking for that magic bullet of what programs can you put in place to ensure that every child is educated. And if you look across the country, when you talk about students who have been disenfranchised and aren't afforded all the same luxuries, it does put them at a disadvantage. And so the work is to catch them up. The work is to expose them to field trips and make sure that they have the same background and that they have the same literacy skills. So I think what you said from just an intelligent, common sense standpoint makes a lot of sense. But the difficulty is you're not talking about an apples-to-apples conversation.
Mm-hmm. So it's just one of the schools that whatever – you can pick a school that's one of the 54 that's closing in Chicago probably doesn't have near the resources or the money that Walt Disney would have.
Definitely not. And resources, you have to think about it 360 degrees. You know, if you have a child that comes home, does the homework on their own, nobody checks the backpack, as opposed to – mom and or dad or a nice rich network of concerned individuals checking on a child, you know, making sure the homework is done, knows when the spelling test is, knows when the evening events are. That's a whole different respect. And one thing that's, you know, larger than the school system is coming from a family of educators. You know, years ago in the 50s and 60s, those who didn't have education still had a respect for it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I look at my grandparents didn't go as far in education, but all of their children have done well for themselves. And what I think we have to really do is take some ownership for that fact and say, hey, no matter what we've done in life, it's important that our children have more experiences than we do.
Yeah. And you know what? So, you know, that's kind of on all of us, because as a society, we don't seem to appreciate smart like we used to. Now it's kind of cool to be dumb. It's kind of cool. It's kind of cool to, yeah. My Homer Simpson is way more popular than Mr. Spock.
Yeah, well, because they're going to have machines to replace all of you all anyway, at some point anyway.
Now,
go ahead, Devon.
No, I had a question because the caller made a point that I really was actually going to be my question at first when she had said that the schools that they are going to close, and people are down there protesting and fighting, and they're letting people come in and plead the case, and they're bringing in the students and everybody to plead the case to keep their school, their particular school, open. Now, it's actually like what she said. It's a question and a statement. My statement is, people, and parents, if you're sending your child down there to get them to reopen this school, and they wind up doing it, you have to participate in that school.
Mm-hmm.
You have to
sure.
get down there and be involved in the PTA meetings and everything, because once you get the school open, you can't dust your hands and say, all right, we've done our job, because the next time, the next round of the school's closing,
mm-hmm.
they will be right back on the list, and now they will have proof to say, see, this is why we closed the school in the first place. That was my statement. My question is, if they do decide to keep out of those 54 or whatever, let's say they keep open those five, what are the real chances with the given opportunity that the parents come down there involved and they do see a slight turn in the students? What are the chances that they're actually going to keep those schools open versus the next time they have us closing that they're going to say, well, no, we tried it, but we still have to close these schools because of blah, blah, blah?
Tough for me to answer, but I think that the answer is they will still be next up on the list. Because I truly think no matter what the issues are going on in these schools, that this is more of a financial decision.
Right.
So you may be able to get a stay of execution, if you will, temporarily. But 5 years from now, another budget crunch. These are the first schools, unless the parents can get so active that they can turn it around.
Right.
I have a couple of friends who teach in some phenomenal schools in Chicago, dealing with children that are coming from some really tough circumstances. So it can be done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, okay, what do you? Here's something that just kind of ticks me off. When they use the things to lure parents or to lure faculty or staff to say, well, we're going to close this school, but we're going to merge everybody into this school, and when we do that, they're going to get new computers,
right,
and iPads and clean hallways. Well, why don't you just do that for the school that they're going to close? Maybe if they're working under those drab conditions, that would harm their education. And if you can put iPads in one school, you should be able to put them in all the schools.
Yeah, but you don't have the extra salaries to pay either.
Yeah, another thing that has happened that was last week, the teachers union got inside of UNO.
Right.
The teachers wanted a union inside of UNO. So that's going to, pretty soon, that's going to be something where the teachers union is going to get into a lot of these corporate schools and then watch how the dynamics change, because the teachers that were working in those corporate schools weren't happy. They weren't happy at all.
I was saying earlier, charter schools have the highest turnover. So if you think about anything you've done in life,
Walmart,
your second year is not the same as your 10th year.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
I know when I was young and I was a second year administrator, I thought I was talented, and I look back at some of the things that I implemented, and I look at it now and say, wow, I had good intentions, but I could do it better now if I was put in that same situation. So when you bring in the new teachers, this is for-profit, right?
Yeah.
So for-profit, we don't care how much experience you have. We want to get you as cheap as we can, work you as long as
we can.
Because
we have to make that profit.
And if you leave next week, we don't care, because we'll find another brand-new person to replace you. We'll train them up. And hopefully we can do this song and dance so our scores look good and have our marketing people make it look good long enough for us to renew our charter. And after we renew our charter, that's all that matters, because it's more about the money than the children.
Speaking of the money, it just dawned on me, and correct me if I'm wrong, wasn't the Illinois Lottery supposed to have so much money allocated to schools? Can someone help me with that?
That was the intention, but... what's happened is that they have reduced the amount that the General Assembly will give schools, so it's kind of a offset.
Exactly. When the lotteries do give money to the schools, they do, but the budget, they take whatever the lottery is given, they'll take it out the back door when they allocate the budget. So if the lottery, say the lottery is generated $2 billion for the schools, well, they'll get that $2 billion, but then when they allocate the budget, they're going to take the $2 billion out of what the state would have gave them to begin with.
I see.
Well, school funding is a whole other issue.
That is going to be part of my other question. Now, with this first day, I remember when I was back in high school, elementary school, they used to tell us all the time, you have to be there for the first day of school because that determines how much money a school will get. How was that? I mean, I know a lot of – now, the schools I went to, like four of the schools – well, not four – out of the schools that are closing, every school I went to is closing. Every school I went to is closing. And I always knew.
Wow.
Yeah, every school I went to is closing.
Maybe it was you.
Yeah, it was me. I left my mark there.
Only had two.
Shout out to everybody who went to Alexander Dumas, Dunbar, OHMC, all them spots. Everybody
closing
knows.
Dunbar?
Oh, yeah, Dunbar.
Oh, wow.
No. They're not closing Dunbar. I'm just saying shout out to my people. But they are closing my elementary school and my other high school.
Okay.
My question is, now I remember going to school, everybody wanted to be there the first day of school because, one, they wanted to show off what they worked for or what they got on that day of school. Now, I'm sure that hasn't changed, especially with fashion being as popular as it is right now. So if that first day of school is so important, how come these schools aren't receiving the money that they were supposed to see for that first day?
Well, they are, and the way the budget works and the taxes is, every school in Chicago really could have comparable budget and materials, because there's not a separate budget for the West Side schools compared to the South Side schools or North Side.
Take that.
It's all one district.
Okay.
So it's
okay.
up to the district to allocate how that money is spent. So in the suburbs,
the central office staff decides what goes to each building. And within the south suburbs, per se, there's a different school district every couple of towns. But there's no reason for, when you think about the tax base, it comes primarily locally from residential taxes, but also commercial. When you look at Chicago, big businesses downtown, a Magnificent Mile, there's a huge tax base. That's why they are able to afford to do certain things. But they do make some administrative decisions and say, hey, we're going to build a brand new spanking school on this side of town, right? Mm-hmm. Because we need to make sure our Gold Coast families have a school to
build. Walter Payton.
It's all wrapped together into the finances. And the tough part is that those who get shortchanged are going to be those who don't speak up enough. You know, those who are not voting enough to make the politicians nervous that, hey, if we shortchange this group, then we're going to pay the price for it.
818-514-1202. You know, in Chicago, a lot of people need to wonder why the UNO schools, which do pretty well and nice buildings, and when school is in, I know one particular street where they'll totally take over the street, shut it down so the kids can get to school, all happen to be in predominantly Hispanic neighborhoods, but they ain't cropping up one in the black neighborhood. Because look who speaks up and look who don't.
Mm-hmm. Well, UNO schools are politically connected with a lot of powerful Hispanic politicians in Chicago. And so there's been a lot of issues about the contracts that they have been granted, and they want to know if it was due to campaign contributions going to the mayor. So there's a connection there.
818-514-1202. I know we got a pretty big board out there. It's been grown a lot, and I see a lot of teachers in there. Come on and raise your hand and shoot some questions this way, because your experience and your knowledge is definitely needed to contribute to this conversation. 818-514-1202. And yeah, I mean, these for profit schools, I mean, they shouldn't be able to allow to make political contributions to begin with, because they should be on an even par with the public schools, and your public schools can't make a contribution.
Definite conflict of interest.
Yeah.
I agree. Wholeheartedly agree.
Now, what solution? I mean, because I keep going back to the schools that are closing, and it to me, my brother had actually came, like a school that I knew, but a school that me and my brother had went to was closing. And that kind of, I didn't think it would affect me like it did, but it's like the memories that I had in that school was kind of like, man, I can't believe they closed in that school. And what options or what actual chance do these parents have of getting some of these schools to not close? If they were to, what can they do, rather, to try to convince them to not close these schools?
That's a tough question. I think, obviously, numbers matter, being able to organize and get enough people excited. But as you spoke to earlier, in a lot of those schools, I would assume, without having specific knowledge, that they don't have a lot of parental support. So to get a group of 50 or 60 people to come out and talk about school closing is going to be hard. But I think it's critical that people do speak up, that they make sure that their voice is heard. And even if they can't get the decision they want as far as the school being kept open, they need to talk with the new principal, new administration, about their transition plan. What are you going to do to welcome my child as a new student in our neighborhood into your school? You know, what does that transition plan look like, and how can you ensure that we're not going to have those safety issues, and making sure that they talk with the central office folks that there are, you know, safe travel for them, you know, that kids can move from one side of the city to the other side of the city without feeling like, oh, my gosh, if I go to school, I might not come home.
Right.
And, yeah.
And with them merging the schools and making, like, I guess they're merging these kids and they're saying that they're going to get a better education by going to this other school or whatever the case may be. And the class, like Ray has said earlier, went from having, like, 16 to 33 students in a class. And when that school starts to fail, this is really not a statement, not a question. I tend to believe that they're going to blame the kids coming from the quote-unquote inner city or whatever to these new schools to bring this production down. And they're going to say that, oh, well, the reason this school is failing is because you brought little G Ron over here from. I mean, I'm not trying to be
right,
funny,
I got
but you brought little G Ron and his thug friends over here to Disney.
Right.
So
well, that ain't gonna happen.
Yeah, we know that. We know that. But I'm just saying, I think that that's gonna be a gripe that some of these teachers are gonna have.
And there may be some truth to that, you know. I think that's why it's important that those schools really have a transition plan that's clear, that we're going to have
yes.
an orientation just for these new families. We're going to make sure they know our schedule, how everything is set up,
mm-hmm.
and that these kids don't feel like outsiders. So as they go into
right,
the new
right.
school, they're sitting in segregated tables, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of similarities when you think about integration and the issues that came out of that as far as what we're looking at now here in 2013.
Yeah. Now, you know what? I tell you what. Let's go ahead and go through our last break. We're going to take one more break. And then when I come back, I got a question for you about turning schools around. And we'll deal with that after the break. Truth Brothers Radio.
Truth Brothers Radio.
Candace from Truth Brothers Radio. As you may know, for 2012, Truth Brothers Radio has received two Jordan McHale Awards for Best New Show of the Year, as well as Best New Group or Duo, and we couldn't have done it without you and your continued support. Keep listening to the Truth Brothers live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time on blogtalkradio.com or call into the show at 818-514-1202 to listen and give us your questions or comments. Missed an episode? No worries. All episodes are archived on our Blog Talk Radio page, Facebook, or you can download episodes for free on iTunes. Be sure to check out our clips on YouTube and share them with your friends and family. Again, thanks for all the love and support as we keep doing that thing. Peace.
Truth Brothers Radio. Yeah, that's the producer supreme on the wheels of steel there, getting it in.
But not exactly.
We're back, and I want to ask you a question. How hard is it when you get handed a school that's in the lower echelon and they say, Mr. Franklin, we want you to turn this school around? How hard is it to get the kids on board with the new program, the faculty on board with a new program to win their trust and to get them to buy into the way you want to do this?
Well, it's a huge undertaking, something I've experienced twice. The one school I can think of, the first year we only had 26% of our students reading at grade level. The second year moved to 40%, and then the third year it was at 63%. And that wasn't something I did. It was really about staff. Now, when you talk about staff, sometimes, you know, I hate to say this, but it's the truth. Everyone who wants to be a teacher is not cut out to be a teacher. And everyone who wants to be an administrator is not cut out for it. So you do have to change the climate. And there are some lumps you have to take even with students and also parents.
Question for you, with that being said. And, you know, this is just strictly opinion, and, you know, this is just how I think. I've noticed that over the years because of budgets being, you know, not so high, for lack of a better term. But I noticed that teachers seem to be getting younger and younger and younger, to the point where some teachers don't even have children. And now they're in, you know, they are coming through the ranks with trying to grow, so to speak, with these upcoming classes. Do you think that is a positive thing, or if that could be an actual detriment to not have that actual experience?
I think on any staff, you want to make sure it's balanced. You want to make sure that you have some younger staff that connect and understand. They know what's going on in the children's lives, and they're not so detached from it. But you also need to have the veterans that have the years of experience that have been through different initiatives, and they can say, hey, you know what? This is going to work, or this is not going to work because I've done it before. But just on the young teachers alone, I think, if I can humbly say, you know, I started teaching at 22, and I think talking with some of those kids years later, I still was able to have an impact. So it's the temperament and the mindset that you have. But as we were talking about some of these charter schools, if you have entire staff with that turnover and everyone is a first or a second year teacher,
yeah.
So who's leading who? You know, the blind leading the blind when you don't have that balance of people who are beginning and those mid-year people who got it together.
Right.
But they're still passionate about it. And then those veterans who are the old sages that kind of sit back, talk slow. They can tell you what's going to happen before it happens. They see it all coming.
Mm-hmm.
And you're so excited and moving fast. And they're like, no, slow down. I told you that's what was going to happen. You know, just like anything else in life.
I got a quick question, though. Not a question, but to go back to the young teachers, I mean, I, for the most part, I believe that because if students have somebody more that they can relate to versus somebody they feel like is another parent to them, it might feel like, in some cases, I feel like it'll help them, because I knew when I was in school, I'd rather have somebody I feel like I could relate to versus somebody who feel like they was always telling me what to do, especially at the 15, 16 age when you feel like you know it all or whatever, like we were talking about earlier.
Right.
Having somebody you can relate to tends to want to open you up more, and you tend to, I think you produce well, and I think for the most part, you need the younger teachers, but you do need, like he was saying, the veterans there that can guide the younger teachers, because they're going to be learning just as much as the kids will be. So I think it's a mixed bag.
And, you know, and I don't want to make it seem like, you know, I don't think young teachers do a good job. That's not what I'm
right,
implying,
right.
Just for anyone who's listening out there. But I had, out of my whole grammar school and high school experience, I had nothing but old school teachers, nothing
right.
but, except one in high school. And I just noticed that being a teenager, she wasn't much older than us, maybe, I'm going to say, 6 to 7 years older than us.
Okay.
Okay. But she couldn't get the respect out of us, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I thought, you know, her personality came off like she would be best suited for younger students, you know, of course. But it just seems like, you know, and it's just funny, like certain stories that we'll hear, even some of the terrible true stories that we even read.
Right.
You know, I just think that some just maybe too close in age with, you know, especially high school students where, you know.
Yeah, here we go.
I'm not going there, but, you know, I mean, you get the general idea of where I'm at with that. But I do agree with you, Mr. Franklin, that it really does call for balance.
Right.
You know, you want to still be relatable to the kid, like you were saying, Devon, but it's that fine line where, you know, you have to be strict enough to make sure your agenda gets pushed across.
I mean, it's a matter of not crossing that boundary. I mean, we all, like, you know, we've had Red come on a couple of times. Red Summer came on, and she's not that far in age from me. And, you know, I mean, everybody looked at her like, oh, that's Red, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, the most part, it's because of her, like you said, her presence in that class. You just you stopped and you just listened. I mean, it's how you carry yourself at the same time.
Yeah.
Don't appear too jokey to them. I mean, be relatable, but still command some form of respect. Don't sit down and put your arm around a kid and just be buddy-buddy with them all the time.
Yeah.
But still appear approachable. you know. And I think a lot of times the young teachers, they're so used to wanting to be cool with the kid.
I know exactly what you know, and this, that, and the third,
that they leaves the door open to a kid to feel like he can approach a teacher in a certain way, like, oh, so what you doing after class, Ms. Robinson, or whatever the claim.
Right. You have to be firm. I agree with what you're saying, and there's a cliche we use all the time in education that the kids don't care what you know until they know that you care. So the fact that you connect with the young teacher was really more about the connection of knowing that teacher cares about your success.
Right.
When I was 22 and teaching on the west side of Chicago, I know I got more respect than some of the veterans because the kids take off their hat, pull out their earring when they walk past my classroom.
Mm-hmm.
But they go down two doors, and that teacher was kind of tired and worn out, didn't feel like harassing these knucklehead kids, and they didn't give them that respect, you know. And they would even come to my classroom, oh, Mr. Franklin, you bogus. I said, well, you know what? Mr. Bogus. Make sure you say Mr. Bogus.
Right. I know that's right.
There you
go. There you go.
Because you will appreciate it later. So with the young teachers, you have to make sure they're mature. I mean, that's your point that I agree with.
Right. Let me ask you this. Do white kids, black kids, Hispanic kids, do they all learn the same?
No doubt about it. I think, you know, the research out there says there's a bigger issue when it comes to economics, but not in the brain and not racially, that based on the economic situation, it can impact the opportunities and things kids are exposed to. But how children learn, it's still the human brain. They all learn the same way.
I just think their opportunities, you know, to learn and to advance are very limited based on where you live.
Yeah, matter of fact, there was another show where one of those Tea Party activists for the corporate schools was on, and she didn't understand what was the importance to giving a kid breakfast before school, and she thought that that was just a waste of government money to give a kid breakfast. She said, eat breakfast before you come there. What are the parents doing? But how important is breakfast in relation to school?
Well, nutrition is everything, and as we all are learning more and more about health and nutrition, you know, what you feed your body, you know, a lot of us pay more attention than the gas we put in our car and how we clean our homes as opposed to what we put in our body. So if a child comes into class and is malnourished, their stomach is growling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, think about times where you've forgotten to eat and you were at work or you were doing whatever you're doing. You cannot stay focused and do well if you are hungry.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's another thing that worries me, too. But it's about that time.
Well, All right.
That's what I'm talking about.
But, yeah, we want to thank you, man, for coming on and hanging out with us, man. You are the second guest that we've actually had here since D-Cole. So that's a big, big, yeah, man. You fucking big footsteps there, man. Yeah. But thank you, man, and you definitely welcome back anytime. And, we're going to go ahead and wrap it up. That's enough in the can. And everybody tuned in, and everybody out there who checked us out instead of the Bulls, we appreciate it. And we're going to let you know that if you're not listening to the Truth Brothers,
then the truth ain't in.
Peace, y'all.
Thanks.